Hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right. All right. Once again, welcome to the show. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I'm broadcasting live out of Chicago on the north side near the lake. And it is, once again, folks, it's miserable. It doesn't look, everybody's saying, where is spring? Where is spring? Well, apparently it hasn't made it here yet. You know, it's raining, it's dull, it's gray. And it's been like this for a few days. And I'm going to say this. I don't think we've had a spring so far yet. And we're looking at the last leg of April 2016. And so far in Chicago, I can't speak for where you are, but I do know in Chicago, because I'm in my studio and I'm looking out onto the Broadway and everybody's wearing big, thick coats. You know, it's just miserable. It's just totally miserable. And I'm not the only one saying that. I mean, there's plenty of people in Chicago that are saying, what the hell is happening? You know, that's a question we all would like to know. But if it's great where you are, it's beautiful where you are, enjoy the weather, get out and walk around, you never know. But if it's just as miserable as you, as we are in Chicago, if you're just as miserable as we are in Chicago, then we pity you. And right. Okay. Okay. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me right here. I'm all over the place. Google, Twitter. I'm not that hard to find. I mean, because if you miss a show here, folks, you miss a lot. I try to have the best on the show, the best guests, the best people, the best authors. And this is a great day for this show, a great day anytime for this show. It's a great day. 347-857-1622. Did someone change the number? 347-857-1762. Okay, we got it. All righty, let's move right along. Let's move right along. On the show yesterday, we had a great guest on the show yesterday. She was beautiful. She was wonderful. And her name was Linda Williams. And I hope you guys go check out her material on Facebook. You know, so if you need any more information about her, you can always contact me on Facebook, Blog Talk, or either email me. I'm not far. Anyway, she was great. All right, let's move right along. Let's move right along. Okay, let's talk about corrupt Illinois politicians. Dennis Hastert, as you probably heard, the entire world has heard that this guy is going to prison for child molestation and basically banking fraud. I mean, this guy, I mean, he was once, as you probably know, once second in line from being president of the United States. He was a speaker of the House, Congress. Yeah, he was a speaker, he was a representative, but he was also a speaker of the House, second in line to the presidency. And it's just sad that he was from Illinois, because that makes another politician from Illinois. I think Illinois has the most politicians in the history of the United States that has gone to jail for some sort of misconduct. I mean, I could rattle off a lot of names. I mean, you can have, let me see, do we have, rattle off a lot of names. Obviously, Hastert, Rod Blagojevich, even though I think Rod Blagojevich was just railroaded. I think that this guy, he didn't do anything. They didn't catch him with anything. They didn't catch him red-handed. He didn't admit to anything like this guy, Hastert. I mean, I've said this all along. I think the governor, former governor of Illinois, Rod Blagojevich, which most people liked, they loved. I think, and a lot, some people agree with me, some people don't, it doesn't matter. But I think my mind tells me that the reason why he's in jail doing a 14-year sentence is because people in the General Assembly and some judges around town just simply did not like him. They didn't like him because they refused to allow evidence into the court that would exonerate him. They refused it. 14 years for what? Talking? That's all he did, talking on the phone. He might have been bullheaded. He might have said a few things. But he just talked. When does just talking get you a 14-year prison sentence? I mean, he wasn't, like I said before, he wasn't caught red-handed with nothing. He wasn't caught exchanging money. They said that he was trying to sell Obama's Senate seat. That never happened. It never happened. It was just talk. 14 years? Give me a break. I mean, some serial killers don't get that much, you know. And every time an appeal comes up to try to lessen his sentence or get him out of jail, you know, it just gets worse for him. But anyway, we have so many. Dan Walker, Jesse Jackson Jr., name a few politicians. His wife, Sherry Jackson, if that's her name. And so many others that have gone to jail. And Dennis Hastert is probably the most high profiled of all, because he was in the United States Congress as Speaker of the House. And he is or was a Republican. So I don't know if he still is a Republican. He's on his way to jail. And it's bad. They say that he admitted to molesting children in his care. He was a wrestling coach, as you probably know if you're following this stuff. But to generalize it, so many politicians have gone to jail, have served time. It's a shame. Corrupt, corrupt, corrupt. The ones that haven't gone to jail, they will be going. Or they've abruptly resigned their seats, thinking that resigning their seats is going to get them out of jail or keep them from going to jail. No, it will not. Another Republican representative from Illinois, Aaron Schock. I don't know, Aaron Schock, this guy, I mean, he thought he was Rock Hudson or somebody. I mean, he's a handsome young man, but he was, you know, misusing campaign funds. I mean, we have so many, and I do believe that the next politician to go to jail would be our current governor, Bruce Rauner, because I think this guy is so corrupt, it's a damn shame. I said this from day one. I think he's going to be one of the governors to go to jail, or either just be thrown the hell out of office, because he's doing nothing, absolutely nothing for this state. I wish I could point to something good or great that he's done for this state in his almost 2 years in office. 2 years in office. He's done nothing. He's hurt the state. He's done a lot to hurt it. I mean, he's done a lot to cripple it. He's done a lot to throw people out of work. He just signed a bill to fund universities, and I would like to say that's a good start, but he just signed a bill to fund colleges and universities because if he didn't do that, they would close. Totally close. But the kicker is the bill that he signed is just for a few months. After the money, the colleges and universities, in a couple of months, they're going to be back in the same predicament. Why not do something half-assed as he's doing, as they're doing? Why not just get a budget for the state of Illinois? We've been without a budget now for 10 months. And these people don't seem to give a damn about that. Each side is digging in and playing hardball while the people of this state suffers. I mean suffer. People are suffering. People have been made homeless by this. People have been made jobless by this. Kids have been thrown out on the street because daycare centers have closed. Mental health centers have folded up. Senior centers, food pantries have closed up. I mean, this state is hurting, and it is caused by Bruce Rauner and some of these guys in the General Assembly that don't give a damn about the people. People are leaving the state. Businesses are boarding up and leaving, and I can't blame them. Not only because there's no state budget, it's just that the taxes are too damn high. And to pay for a lot of other things, they're going to raise more taxes. So we got a bunch of bozos and assholes and people who are just inept trying to run this state. A bunch of bozos. You know, I call them bozos. They think more about their own bottom line than they are of the people of this state. A lot of these jerks are in the legislature and the city council, and I'm talking about aldermen too. You know, it's just awful that the people are not being represented like they should be. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, WTTTY. It is 6:12 straight up Chicago time, Central Standard Time. Sometimes I get the time zones up myself. I'm perfect, folks. I'm just here. And, you know, earlier today, if I can switch, earlier today, all you were hearing, if you were listening to the news or you were listening to the reports, is that Ted Cruz, one of the presidential candidates that are running for presidential of the United States, Ted Cruz, was about to make a big announcement. And my thinking was, every time I heard it, wow, he's going to drop out of the race. This is my thinking, that he was going to drop out of the race because he had just lost five big states to Donald Trump. So I'm saying this, and everybody was saying, well, he doesn't have a chance. Him and John Kasich, their collusionness did not work. And that Trump prevailed big time. So my thinking, and I'm pretty sure others, my thinking was that this guy's going to drop out of the presidential race and go on and just go back to where he came from, probably Congress. He's a senator. Ted Cruz is also, I believe, a millionaire. So my thinking, well, he's going to drop out of the race. He's going to drop. Lo and behold, his announcement was he has chosen a vice president. And I'm saying, what? A vice president? Ted Cruz, you are not going to be elected. So he still feels that he has some sort of momentum. He does not. He does not. I mean, Donald Trump has trampled and landslided this guy. And now instead of dropping out of the race, he goes get a vice president running mate. you guys are not going to get 2 feet to the White House. And they're not. And the thing, and here's another kicker, folks. Here it is. His running mate is Carly Fiorina, the failed Hewlett-Packard CEO. She failed that company. She driven that country into the ground. I mean, that corporation, it's a corporation. She's driven that corporation into the ground. She was fired. She's a failed presidential candidate, and he picks her. To me, this is like choosing Sarah Palin, because Carly Fiorina, I mean, when she was running for president and she was on that debate stage with all those other guys, all those other Republican candidates, when there were so many of them, I mean, she would get up there and all she did was lie. I mean, she talked about Hillary Clinton like Hillary Clinton was her pet doll or something, dog or something. And she would just blast Planned Parenthood. You know, it was awful. And she would basically lie. His Ted Cruz running mate is Carly Fiorina. I'm looking at the banner. It says Cruz and Fiorina. What the hell is going on? This is not going to happen. He's trying to find a way to stay in the race. He knows he's losing. He knows he hasn't a chance. But then he's going to go out there and pick a running mate that no one particularly likes, Carly Fiorina. He's just nailed his losing coffin shut, as far as I'm concerned. She one of the things about Carly Fiorina, she loves the spotlight. I mean, she loves the camera. She loves walking up to a microphone, spewing out her and vile. She loves that. But I have a feeling the reason why Ted Cruz chose Carly Fiorina for his running mate. Think about it, folks. She's a woman, and he's trying to court the women vote away from Donald Trump. She's a woman. That's the reason why he chose her, because he's trying to get the women's vote. He figured running with a woman is going to give him a foothold closer to the White House. That's not going to true. That's not true, at least not with Carly Fiorina, because most women do not like her. And I'm telling you the truth. She scoriated and lied about Planned Parenthood. And I think one of the reasons Ted Cruz has lost, a lot of these states has lost, is because every time you see this guy on television, he's got a microphone, he's at some rally, and one of the things that he says that is that he's going to every inch of Obamacare. Believe me, people did not that. He may feel that people accepted it. Or the American Health Act, whatever you want to call it. They like their health care, and they don't want it taken away. Millions and millions and millions of people, Obamacare has helped. And suddenly Cruz comes in and says he's going to dismantle it. He's going to tear it apart. He's going to get rid of it. People did not buy that. They don't want that. Now, Donald Trump has not said anything like that, because Donald Trump is not going to do that. And I've said for a long time on this show that Donald Trump would make a better president than Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz is more dangerous than Donald Trump. And I'm not the only one saying that. Former President Jimmy Carter said the same thing. And I believe Tavis Smiley has said the same thing, even though Tavis Smiley can't stand Trump. He can. I got a few clips here of Tavis Smiley, and he is blasted. I don't think they like each other, actually. So that's interesting. But back to Ted Cruz choosing a running mate that's going to sure his downfall even more. She is not going to help him. she is going to make things worse for him. Because why? Simple as that. Maybe a few here or there, but the majority of women do not like her. And everybody that I've spoken with say the same thing. Basically, that Ted Cruz has assured himself of not being serious about this race, picking her. I mean, you got Carly Fiorina, you got Sarah Palin, you got two women that most Americans feel should go back to wherever the hell they came from. But they love the spotlight. They love the camera, even though they have nothing to offer but lies on top of lies. And they throw that crap out there as if you're supposed to believe it. They throw that crap out there as if they're trying to tell you something. The only thing they're saying is trying to get you to believe what they want you to believe. As if we don't have minds of our own. As if we can't think for ourselves. If she hates Planned Parenthood, she wants the entire world to hate Planned Parenthood. And the majority of women who are utilizing Planned Parenthood are women, poor women. And they're doing a great job. I mean, I'm looking at Carly Fiorina right now. I mean, it looks as though she's had some sort of facelift. I'm pretty sure after Donald Trump called her a bunch of ugly names, she went out and got herself a facelift. But that facelift, Carly, is not going to help you into the White House as vice president. A break. All right, folks, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. All right, I have down here Corey Livingston, and I understand that he is a musician for hire. And hopefully he will be calling into the show and giving us some info about himself, his life, and why should we pay any attention. All right, you're listening to George on the Junior Show. I will be back. Oh no. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Bernie Sanders, he's about to lay off hundreds of his staffers. I mean, what does that tell you, folks? Bernie Sanders is about to lay off 100 of his staffers. That's also saying that he's ready to pack it in. He sees the writing on the wall. Apparently, Ted Cruz and John Kasich, they do not. And, you know, that's a good thing, because this contest has seemed like it's going to be between Hillary and Donald Trump. And like I said just before the break, folks, I was saying that Ted Cruz has picked Carly Fiorina to be his running mate. And I think that is just awful. But, you know, I mean, he's losing. He's lost five states. Like I said, he lost five states Super Tuesday. On Super Tuesday, Donald Trump trumped him, I mean, on all of this. And she's just pathetic, because she just so against Planned Parenthood. And I don't think too many women care for her. So he's picked running mate. I thought he was going to drop out. I actually thought he was going to drop out, because they kept saying that Ted Cruz was setting himself up for a big announcement earlier today. And his big announcement was that he was picking a vice president. How in the hell can you pick a vice president when you are losing? Like, I don't know what, you know, but I mean, you got to give the guy credit. He's confident and he has a losing strategy that he has. So, Bernie Sanders, yeah, he's gonna, from what I'm reading here, he's going to call it quits, you know, but he wants all of us. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, but, you know, the writing's on the wall. He's out of it just about. And he's trying to get all of his supporters to now back Hillary Clinton. You know, that can happen. That can happen. But, you know, some people still don't like Hillary Clinton. But, you know, if they're Democrats or progressive, they're probably going to hold their nose and try and vote for her. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for being out there. Thanks for all your input. Thanks for all your nice things that you say about the show. I'm telling you, folks, it's just, I'm in my studio. I'm in Chicago. I'm near the lake here, and it is raining. It's dull. I mean, it's just not spring. And I keep harping on this, because I'm looking out on to the boulevard here, and I'm seeing rain and gray. And this has been happening here in Chicago for a few days. And I hope wherever you are, that you're having much better weather. And if you're having the same weather we're having, well, join the club. Join the club, folks. All right, let's go to the phones. Hey, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Yeah, hello.
All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Corey Livingston?
Corey Livingston here. How are you, George?
I'm fine. I'm fine. How are you, man?
Very good. Very good. And we had the same weather that you guys had. We had the same weather a couple of days ago. It rained all night and rained all day and it was cold. But now it's cold.
Yeah.
And we could stay here, though. We got some sun, though, today.
Yeah, you're right, man. It's just rain all day, rain all night, gray, 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 gray. I mean, a couple of days ago, we were in the 80s. And then it just suddenly dropped like a rock. And then
there
it just
go.
kept on dropping. and it's miserable. All right.
Yeah,
so
well,
tell us something.
It'll be a better
right.
day tomorrow. Better days are coming.
You know what? I was newscast and they say it's going to be like this all week, at least in this city. You know, so I'm kind of hunkered down and ready for it, you know. So, you know,
while you're in the windy city, anyways, right?
Right, and the weather changes the minute every time you turn a corner. Yeah, every time you turn a corner.
Yeah.
All right, tell us something about yourself and you know, your biography, just a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I've been a musician all my life,
mm-hmm.
composer, songwriter, played piano, and. Of course, I'm, which is probably no, but I'm from Canada, Toronto, Canada, just due east of you guys, almost the same parallel.
Yeah.
And I've never been to Chicago, but I know all about it, thanks to Jim Croce and Lou Rawl, you know.
Oh, yeah, Lou Rawl, Jim Croce, some of the greatest musicians of all time, man.
Yeah, you know, they're all talking about the Windy City. But anyways, I'm from Toronto, and I've grown up here, you know, lived here all my life. You know, we have a, when I was young, growing up in Toronto, we were the only black family in our neighborhood for miles around, you know. And, and, you know, it might have seemed kind of strange with you folks down there, but, you know, you grow up and you're just sort of used to it, right? Didn't have any problems, you know, like you might expect. You know, it wasn't anybody marching up and down streets. You know?
All right, Corey.
And actually, I grew up in a predominantly Jewish area. Actually, we crossed a certain street. It was Lawrence Avenue. South of Lawrence was always about 95% Jewish. And the north of Lawrence, where I lived, it was, I was only about a block away, was everybody else, you know? But the schools I went to were, you know, about 80% Jewish and 0.5559% black, and I was under the same name, my two brothers and my two sisters. You know, but nothing ill to report there, other than you know, some of the things somebody had I went to school here. I studied here at the conservatory. I studied I studied jazz piano with a fellow named Alan Ray. He was an accompanist to Billie Holiday in his heyday at one time for a short while. So, you know, I've got some good credentials there. And I graduated from Wilfrid Laurier University. That's a place near just outside of Toronto in music several years ago. You know, I basically made my living as all from music. You know, I'm either playing in clubs, not as much as I used to, but I've been privately teaching music, and I taught, still teach in the public schools, just part-time.
Yeah.
And I had my own private school for a while. It was called the Toronto High School for the Performing Arts. We combined dance, music, and drama, along with academic studies. That was back in the late 70s and early 80s. And now I'm a published author.
Yeah, I see that you're a published author. You have a book called Quiet Determination. Yeah. Yeah.
And the book, basically, the premise of the book says successful in music, successful in life. And you probably say, well, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think it's unlocking the gate of unlimited success.
Yes, quiet determination, unlocking the gates to unlimited success. That's right.
And you are basically you're for hire.
I'm for hire, yeah. have instruments, will travel, you know. I'm branching out as a published author, but I'm also going into keynote speaking as a result of the book.
Oh wow! And you I'm thinking that one of your favorite pianists was probably Oscar Peterson.
He was, you know, he was number three.
Number three.
Just number three on the list. Yeah, and I'll tell you who number one was. I'll tell you who number two was. Number two is Bill Evans.
Okay. All right.
And number one with Thelonious Monk.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I've listened to some of Thelonious Monk compositions. But you know what? To me, the greatest pianist to me. I know you're probably going to disagree with this, but I think it's Oscar Peterson. I have some of his records here, and it's just something about the way he plays. He's just so talented.
He was talented, and he could, nobody could swing like him. I mean, he swang, and he could swing. He could swing. You know, I met him when I was about 18 years old. But the reason I put Monk, I mean, ahead of Peter, Oscar could play upside down and backwards and forwards.
Mm-hmm.
He could play better with one hand than I can with two.
You know, I once heard a controversy from Miles Davis. He wasn't too keen on the way Thelonious Monk played, because they played together at one time.
I can understand. See, it's not how Monk played. Like, mm-hmm. technique, he stunk. He didn't have any technique. Okay, he was no virtuoso. But it was what he played. It's what he played. Monk played with his brain. He played with his head. Okay, that's why I like him. I can literally hear him thinking while he's playing the piano.
Okay, so
he's saying, "Well, I'll do this now, and I'll do that, and we're going to go over here," and you can hear him working things out.
Mm-hmm. But he would never play the same song the same way again.
No, but you know why? Because he improvised all the time.
Yeah.
He was thinking of new ways to say the same old, not the same old, but he was thinking of new ways. Now, how can I play this piece different that way? You know, because every composer, you know, the final version that you hear, you know, especially even if you go back to classical composers, you know, the Europeans, the Beethovens, the Mozart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The piece that's on the paper is only the piece that they wrote down so everybody else could play it. Those mm-hmm. guys improvised like banshees. They could play the same concerto 100 different ways. And they probably did if they played it themselves, but they codified it, right? So this is the way that the public will recognize it, right? You can play that, and this is the way it's played. But they can take their own compositions, and they will play them different because they know them inside out. And Monk is the same thing. Oscar will do, he did the same thing too, but not quite as much because he had a lot of, his big thing was technique.
Yes.
You know, his was technique. He could float over those keys like nobody's business, you know. And to play that quickly, you have to sacrifice something. And what you sacrifice is taking time to figure things out. You have a lot of templates, a lot of formulas, okay, a lot of systems. And you just say, okay, number one, number two, number 15, number 39. And you sort of put them in place and you do them. So, and that's the big difference between the two.
Yeah, I dabbled in piano playing. And I loved it. I thought it was just so refreshing and wonderful. My wife at the time, she enjoyed it. And the friends, I mean, I wasn't, you know, in clubs or anything. I just did it around the house. But I did a lot of improvising. And I think my improvising was a lot better than if I, you know, was reading off the paper, reading music.
Oh, for sure.
And and
in fact, that's harder for that's harder
yeah,
for,
it is.
For most people, you know, that's much harder than reading the notes.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, when you're reading the notes, your brain is at rest. Okay. It's not working. Okay.
Yeah.
It is doing some work. It's decoding. Okay, but when you're improvising, I mean, your brain is making stuff up. It's working hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people need direction. You know, you were probably blessed with that, and had you been pressed a little more, you probably could have really gone farther than you've gone, because it does take courage to say, okay, brain, let's make some stuff up.
Yeah, yeah. And when I did read the music, I didn't play everything down on that paper. I always added something of my own in there, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a true jazz musician you are. See?
Yeah.
A true improviser.
Yeah, I always added. Yeah, yeah. I haven't given it up. I just haven't touched the piano in a long time. I think if I if I went back to the piano, I think I'd probably be just as good as I have always been. I've never been a great pianist. I just love playing it. I mean, and it's a shame that the piano seems like it's just an instrument of the past now.
Well, yes. Well, in fact, a lot of instruments are the instruments of the past. You know, well, it depends where you're going. If you're talking about pop music, yeah, because it's all electronics, and you can fire so many things off from the keyboard. So the keyboard is sort of
exactly
taking the place of the good old fashioned piano. There used to be a time, like you say, every house had a piano in it. You know, back before TV was made.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you're right there. That the piano is being taken over by the keyboard, and you know, and there's lots of reasons for that. I mean, price for one thing, space, cost.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of the things that happened. But the piano will still be here. It'll never go away. Just not.
Yeah, it'll still be here. It'll always be here, and people will always have a piano. And it's gonna always serve its purpose, you know. But it's just not going to be like it once was. Okay, Corey, tell us more about your book.
Sure. Anything in particular where you want me to start? I mean, there's so many places, so many things I can talk about.
What is your favorite?
My favorite chapter. My favorite chapter is the first chapter. Believe it or not, and. It ended up being that. Not that I said, well, you know, this is my favorite. I'm going to write my favorite thing first. It ended up being the most favorite chapter because the way the book is written, let me just do some background for you. Each chapter has three sections, okay? First of all, the first section is the story. So, and it's a story based on my life. It's sort of a biographic picture of me taking piano. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's based around, and the hero of the book is, his name is Emmanuel, but that's really me. Okay.
Wow.
So what I did was, I'm looking at my childhood memories and use that around the piano and use that as the heart, right? And then I built a fictional story around that, okay? Things actually really did happen. I may not make them up, but I added to it. It's just like a movie, right? But in each chapter is like that. But it happens to be that this chapter is about 99% right from my life. Everything else might go as far, maybe 25%, 50%, you know, as far as the amount of biographical material. So, and it just came out that way. Cause, you know, I started. And this is why the book sort of flowed so easy, because I wrote my experience through Emmanuel. He was my puppet, right? And everything I wrote in that book, from that particular first chapter, that first chapter was called Sustained Accountability. Now, as I said, it's got three parts. The second part was what's called the takeaway. So that was, what's the lesson that Emmanuel learned in the story that the reader just read. What lesson did he read? What lesson did he take away? Okay. And then the third part of the chapter was called The Coach's Corner. And this is, I came to, I guess, after the chapters had been, I was halfway through the book. And I said, you know, I'm going to check, just curious, to see what science says about the truth of my takeaway. So, truth about the Bible. What science has about? Does science have any parallel findings in their research as to what the takeaway, what Emmanuel learned in his lessons? You know, and I researched, it blew me away. Everything that was learned psychologically in the lessons has been backed up by psychological research by scientists and professors right around the world. So that was sort of like my proof that to the reader, like, I'm not talking through the side of my, I'm not talking through my, I'm not blowing smoke, right?
Right.
It's been corroborated. So it looks like this. The first chapter is called Sustained Accountability. So it talks about Emmanuel, looking out of his front, out of the picture window of his living room in his home, one afternoon, and he sees these two gentlemen dragging this, looked like a huge, because he's only 7 or 8, this huge piano up the steps. And this is me. This is actually from my life. I saw these guys bringing the piano up the steps. They bring it down the hallway into the living room and unwrap it. And my mom says, well, you're going to start piano lessons next week. In fact, you and your two brothers are going to start piano lessons. And so what do I know about piano lessons? It was neither here nor there, So, and your mom says that. What are you going to say? No, right? So I started a piano lesson. And the downside of the piano lessons when I started them was I had to practice every single day. It was news to me. My mother said, you got to practice every day at a specific time for a specific amount of time. And she chose 5 o'clock. That was my time because the kitchen was kind of at the end of the living room, so she could be making dinner, right, and listen to me at the same time, supervising. So 5 o'clock, I'm playing, and I had to practice for 30 minutes. And it was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, every day.
Wow.
And so what happens? I'm playing every 2 or 3 minutes. I stop. And what do I ask my mom? Is the half hour up yet? No, not yet. And so that was my first lesson. I now go to the takeaway. What's the takeaway of that? I learned how to be accountable. My mother, my mother made me accountable. She said, you're going to do it, whether you like it or not. You're going to see it through. Okay.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah. So there's my lesson. That's the takeaway.
And then
I'll go. And so then I go to the third part of the chapter, and I'll see what scientists say about accountability. And everybody says, wasn't me. Oh, it's not my job. Everybody wants to shift accountability, right? And so I researched about why people avoid being accountable. It's because one of the main reasons is because you don't want to be. You grow up saying, "Who did this?" Okay, you're looking for someone to blame because when something was done wrong, there were consequences, right?
Right.
Your embarrassment. Oh, you did it wrong. It's your fault. Okay, so you're getting stepped on, right? And so people don't like that, right? I'm not going to take responsibility. I'm not going to take the blame. So what you do, we're trained to avoid accountability. And what you really should be doing is stepping up. Yeah, it was me. I take it. It's my fault. I'll have to do better or whatever it is, okay?
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at ways to get what a leader does. Okay, you have to get away from saying, who's responsible for this? Okay, that's not the answer you should be saying. You're going to be saying, how can I stop this from happening again? Okay, instead of saying, you're responsible for this, saying, what can I do to help this? Or what can I do to avoid this the next time? So, what you're doing then is looking at a positive instead of looking, because once somebody's blamed, right, everything stops, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The problem's swept under the table. It's still there. You have to learn how to say, okay, I did plan A before, but now I'm going to do plan B because I know the plan A didn't work. So what happens is you get another chance to find the right answer or do the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the research backs up Emmanuel's takeaway about sustained account. And with sustained accountability, you get results. You know, there's Tom Landry.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
He was the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, you know, for 20 years. He had 17, 20 winning seasons, and how many championships did he win? I mean,
I'm not sure.
What he said about accountability, as far as a coach, he says, a coach's job is to make grown men do what they don't want to do in order to make them what they always wanted to be.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Corey Livingston on the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. He is a musician for hire. He is a, he has a book called Quiet Determination. And Corey, can you tell us where we can find that book?
Oh, yeah, you can get it right on Amazon. Just type in Amazon, type in my name, spell it K-O-R-Y, and Livingstone, just like it sounds, and you should come up to it, or type in Quiet Determination.
Okay,
one of those.
Great. Okay, this is your first book, right?
You can also, if you want an autographed copy, you can email me at Corey@CoreyLivingstone.com. You know, and we'll all arrange to get you an autographed copy sent to you right quick.
Great, great. And this is your first book?
My first book, yes.
Mm-hmm. Will you be working on a second book?
I will be working on a second book, but the hardest part of any book is getting people to know about it. Okay.
Oh, yeah, you got to get folks to know about it, and that's one of the things you're trying to do here. And
exactly.
Like I said, once this show is over, I'm going to promote it. I'm going to advertise. I'm going to get it out there to people so they can actually listen to you and hopefully go purchase that wonderful book because it's about your life.
Actually in the midst of making an audio version of the book, talking about it. It's not a new book, but I'm doing the audio version, so that will be available too, so people can put it on while they're driving their car or doing their exercise, whatever.
That's great. That's wonderful. So, Corey, is there anything else you would like to say that you haven't said already to my audience?
Well, I would like to say... And I'm actually speaking to parents here at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, myself, all parents, and by definition, you have kids just by definition of the word, right? Parents, or even future parents in waiting. You know, we all want our kids to be successful in life. It doesn't matter what they do, right? As long as they're successful and they're happy.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, there's been this age-old argument that, you know, especially in a lot of school boards and whatnot, or even with parents themselves, they say, well, I'd like to get my son or daughter started, but I can't afford the instrument or I can't afford the lessons.
Yeah.
School boards
yeah.
say, well,
yeah.
we've got a small budget, you know, our budget's reduced, so let's cut the arts programs, you know, and the first thing to go was music. And so I'm talking to educators and parents. Music will end up being the most powerful, least expensive method of ensuring that your children are successful. Why?
Because
this is the very essence of the book that I wrote about. Like I said before, the summary of the book basically is successful in music, successful in life. What I learned, and it's in this book, 16 chapters, the lessons that I learned, and the first we always talked about being accountable, the lessons that I learned through music, I didn't even know I was being, I was learning those. It was a mindset that was built in me, you know, lesson by lesson. It was a mindset, the tools, the way I was able to be successful in music, those same tools you apply to your everyday life, apply to your career, apply to your schoolwork, no matter what. These same, these tools are transferable. It's actually a mindset that gets built, okay? And this is what will help your children be successful. You can spend $100,000 on a university college education, right? And it'll only come out at least with a head full of knowledge. But will they know how to apply that knowledge? Will they know how to exploit that knowledge to their best advantage? You know,
I totally agree with you. I think music is one of the greatest things a parent can have their child to do, because music helps a child to learn.
Exactly. And a child does not have to be great. Everybody says, well, you know, doesn't play very well, doesn't sing very well, doesn't do anything, you know, doesn't play the piano, doesn't lousy vibe.
Corey.
You don't have to be great.
Corey, can you take a phone? Corey,
hello?
Can you take a phone call? Can you take a phone
call?
Sure,
yeah, sure.
Hello, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show with Corey Livingston.
Okay, how you guys doing?
Yeah,
we're doing
good.
Okay.
Very good. How you doing?
All right. I haven't been here long, but I guess from the gist of it, you guys are talking about getting music back in school, or just how important music is early on.
That's right.
Just how important music is early on, childhood.
Mm. Okay. Great point. I guess my question for you guys then, since this is something you guys are kind of way more well-versed in than I am, how do we actually get more musical tools in the hands of kids at school, meaning a drum machine, old records, like teaching kids how to create the music that they listen to right now? I don't mean like traditional instruments. I mean computer programs and the things that people use right now, and just to bring the wonderment out of it and let kids know, like, this is, you know, you can do this just like your favorite artist.
See, there's one of the, you're talking about drum machines and things like that and computer apps. Right there is one of the things that kills the music. That's a shot right in your own heart, okay? Let's take, for instance, young Willie wants to be a drummer. You don't want to buy that boy a drum machine. Because all he has to do is plug it in to the wall, hit a button, and sit back. Okay, nothing's happening. He's not gonna. He will not appreciate how the rhythms, accents, okay, changing the rhythm, tempos, speed, 6 beats to a bar, 3 beats to a bar, a waltz, a rock, a swing, polka. You have to know. You have to understand how these things were created. Otherwise, it's like being an artist. I'm going to be a great artist, okay? And so you send me a canvas, I'm going to paint by numbers, okay? And it says put a blue here in this spot, put a red in that spot. You have no idea. You cannot call yourself an artist. You will not, and that will give you no, that won't be any credit to you. All you'll know is how to follow instructions and paint inside the lines.
And I
give
think
you one iota.
Well, sir, can I kind of have a rebuttal to that? Because I think it's a generational thing. After you, of course. I'm not trying to jump the line.
But. No. I mean, it's good to hear this because, I mean, this is – and I'm glad you're bringing this up. Very important.
Oh,
go ahead.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, the first thing I would say is if you've ever actually created a beat, you would know that, no, you don't just press a button. You kind of go through the same obstacles every musician goes through. Learning the machine is the same as learning an instrument. You figure out what you like, what you don't like, and you also get an appreciation for the great drummers or great musicians of the past. Like, I know who Bob James is because of hip-hop, because of the people who sampled him, and because of the drums I would try to find when I was in high school that I would want to use for different beats. So you go through these huge catalogs of records of all of these artists, and you hear certain drums that you would like, certain drums that you wouldn't like. You learn the tempo by the BPMs that you would put on in order to create the beat. And that instrument is the same as any other instrument, same degree of difficulty and everything else. If it was as simple as people think it is, then everybody would be doing it and making money from it. No, it's extremely difficult, and you have to have an ear for music to really get talented at it. And I'll give you for a prime example, the producer, the RZA of the Wu-Tang Clan, that man, he made records and sold over 100 million records. And in his late 30s, he said, I'm going to learn to read music. He learned to read music, and he couldn't make a beat for 2 years. After he had gone all through his life going by ear, by tempo, the heartbeat, the rhythm, the soul of music that was just in him. You know what I mean? Like, that's a crazy story, I know, but it kind of gives you an idea about what I'm talking about as far as how
difficult. Yeah, I know what you're talking. Go right ahead, Corey.
Yeah. I mean, what he did there, he tried to fix something that wasn't broken.
Yeah.
He didn't need lessons, you know. The rest of us do.
Right.
Okay, but he was there already. I mean, and I thought I was talking about that yesterday. Think of Albert Einstein, okay, theory of relativity. His mind, that was his playground, right? He and so for us to try and emulate him, we're going to have 10,000 different rules to follow.
Yeah.
Who can cope with that? And we end up like your friend there. Everything just we lose everything. So what study means is we're trying to be like something that we aren't. We're trying to get from here to there. But the person who's already there, I mean, light years ahead of us, like this fellow you talked about. That was his mistake. He didn't need. People should be watching him, but unless he was trying to codify it so people could understand him. But he was probably feels like he was so far advanced, like he was the wrong person to try and codify it. What he was doing, he needed somebody else who wasn't anywhere near talented as he was. So, so that's an extreme case. That's an extreme case. Like I say, he fixed something that wasn't broken, and then
wrecked. Right.
You know.
All right. Thank you for your call, sir. Thank you for your call.
Good night.
Bye-bye. All right. Corey Livingston on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's been nice having you on the show. Come back, Corey. And I will – Corey, would you like a link to the show? Put it on your website?
Yeah. I'd love to have one. Yeah,
you,
for sure.
Website, a blog. I think you've done a great job. I will always ask you back to the show in return.
Anytime.
So thanks for being on the show. I'll talk
to
you later.
George.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
You too. All right, that was Corey Livingston on the George Wilder Jr. Show. He is a musician for hire. He seems to know his stuff. And he has a book called Quiet Determination, Unlocking the Gate of Unlimited Success, a piano player, jazz piano player. He's played with with Oscar Peterson, one of my favorite piano players. I think after... Oscar Peterson actually was my own influence. I mean, I played the piano. I played, I improvised a lot. I did read some music, but I added my own touch to it, as any musician would be. This was his first book. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks, and I will be right back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being there.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
All right. Okay. All right, folks, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago. It is raining, it is gray, it is dull, it is miserable. But I'm here on the show, and I'm enjoying myself immensely, and I hope you listeners out there are enjoying it. I don't know if I've gotten some recent news that they're saying now that painkillers were found on the body of Prince. Painkillers. I had an idea that is probably the cause of his death. I was telling my own son that painkillers, just like the ones that, you know, took the life of Michael Jackson, Elvis Presley, these people taking these pain pills because, and a lot of times they're taking pills to rest and relax because they're doing all these concerts, they're recording songs, doing show after show, being creative year after year after year, and they're not getting the proper rest. They're saying that Prince had two false hips or something to that effect, and he needed painkillers for those. And obviously, the autopsy is not quite conclusive yet. It has not come out yet, actually. And obviously, they're gonna. This is what it's leading up to. It's leading up to drugs that causes death. You know, I mean, because I've read somewhere where Prince didn't actually get any sleep for 154, was it days or hours? You know, I mean, you can't do concert after concert after concert after concert, recording after record. I mean, walking into the studio, you need your rest, you need your sleep. You're not going to be good at what you do. And it's coming out slowly but surely that he maybe overdosed on pain pills or over-the-counter drugs or something, because the TMZ, I don't put much stock in TMZ, but a lot of the news outlets do. And there was this photo of Prince, recent photo of Prince, getting out of a actually heading back to a SUV that seemed to have been parked in a parking lot, maybe a Walgreens parking lot, where he was seen going back and forth four times waiting for someone to bring out his drugs, you know, his painkillers or whatever. And this was recent. And another thing I think that probably killed Prince is probably maybe he was little. The guy, Prince, was little, but 57 years old, 5'2", and he was skinny as a Betsy bug. That could have played a part in it too, that his health, overall health, you know, I mean, if you weighing 100 pounds at 57 years old, 110 pounds, there's something wrong at 57. And he was short. But it's still a tragic, no matter how you look at it. It is a tragic. And I've talked about Prince about three or four times in the last few shows that I've done, because everybody else was talking about it. But however, I was a big fan. And I'm not going to lie about this, folks. I was a bigger Michael Jackson fan than I was a Prince fan. But, you know, his death is no less fine than Michael Jackson. So, you know, they're both equal in my eyes. But I was more of a Michael Jackson fan than I was a Prince fan. It seems as though they both, the deaths contributed to, hopefully, not hopefully, but it's going to come out that drugs took, there's no doubt about it, drugs took Prince away from us. But the thing about it, Prince left us. He, just like David Bowie, Prince left us so much unreleased material that we're going to be listening to new stuff from Prince, new recordings from Prince, from as the years, you know, come. So, I mean, we may have lost Prince, but we still have his music. You know, we still have, and we have new music that was never recorded that I'm pretty sure they're going to put out here. Because the other day we went shopping for some Prince music and it was all sold out. Everything, I mean, it doesn't matter if it was Prince, it was sold out, you know. And that's something about dead celebrities. I mean, they are gold mines. I mean, they they are worth more dead than alive. And that's harsh to say, but in some cases it's true. I mean, it's true in the case of Elvis. It's true in the case of Michael. It's true in the case of Prince. I mean, Michael was broke, but he was still taking in IOUs. So the moment of his death, I mean, his record sales soared. I mean, Billie Jean just Billie Jean was just out of the window, folks. What can I say? So it's still sad. We've lost a lot of people, folks. I mean, we have lost a lot of people. It just, I can go down the list. Prince, Michael Jackson, James Brown, Luther Vandross, Merle Haggard, Whitney Houston. I mean, the list is endless. But like I just got through saying, they left us their music. David Bowie. They left us their Merle Haggard? Okay. All right. They left us their music. So, you know, and that's a great thing. That's a good thing. On tomorrow's show, folks, we have a smart quiz question on the show. Do we have that? No, we don't have that. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to be discussing domestic violence. And we're going to hopefully have some ladies talking about victims, women who were victims of domestic violence, talk about that. And I've heard it. It's stunning. It's stunning. So that show is in the making now. And because domestic violence, folks, is just something that we're going to have to deal with and try to positively rid ourselves of that kind of thing. But I don't know. I mean, when I was growing up as a child, I've seen a lot of domestic violence. I mean, guys are just plummeting women. I've seen it in my family. So it's a pet peeve with me. Some people out here, you know, giving their time to diabetes and cancer. I give my time to totally trying to eradicate domestic violence, something that's been here for a long time and probably will still be here after I try to help eradicate it. I'm not going to do it by myself, but, you know, I can talk about it. I can make it, give it a bit more of a spotlight, and especially having people on your show, hopefully in the future, who have been victims of themselves of domestic violence. And because I've had guests on the show, female guests on the show, and every time we talk or we have a conversation or ask questions or interview, they will say at some point that they were once a victim of domestic violence. Some of the greatest people that's been on this show. And I want to kind of donate a lot of time to that subject. So be with me tomorrow, folks. We're going to be talking about domestic violence. I have and it's going to be for a while, too, because I want to get the word out about that. And once again, I want to thank my guest, Corey Livingston, a musician for hire. He's been around a long time. He's elder, and he seems to know his stuff at some point. But anyway, thanks him for being on the show, and I appreciate it. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio right here. I'm on Amazon, too. I got a lot of books and a lot of works up there. You can put my name in there, and a lot of my books will fall down in front of your face. And we're also going to have a smart quiz question tomorrow. So tomorrow should be a fun time on this show, so join me. We have about, maybe 11 more minutes into the show, and we're going to talk about a little bit more about the election when I come back. All right, here we go. When I come back, can we queue up that clip? Let's see. We're trying to queue up the clip. All right.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my
father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. Like I was saying at the beginning of the show, Dennis Hastert, former Speaker of the House and a resident of Illinois, is going to jail for child molestation. He's getting 15 months in prison for paying hush money. I mean, as I was saying before, folks, I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, we've had Illinois politicians go to jail numerous times, and it just keeps on happening. It keeps on happening. But this guy, like I said, this guy was second in line to be president of the United States. He was the Speaker of the House in Congress, Washington. And, you know, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. I felt he should have got more than 6 months. I mean, because you want to send a message to other politicians who are thinking about becoming corrupt. But you know what? Even if politicians know that if they do wrong in office, they're going to go to jail, they will, the idiots, some of them, will still do wrong. You know, I mean, there's no talking to them. I mean, Aaron Schock, I mean, I can name him Jesse Jackson Jr., his wife, a couple of governors, Rob Blagojevich, and a couple of more governors, and some more representatives from Illinois. I mean, a lot of these people in Illinois have gone to jail. To jail. And rightly so. And it's just pathetic. We don't want Chicago to be known as the murdering capital of the world, and we don't want Illinois to be known as a state with the most corrupt politicians. But it's going down that road. It's going down that road. He was Dennis Hastert, a child molester. You know, I mean, how many people you think are politicians and some, not all, some school teachers. I've heard of school teachers and coaches, you know, molesting people in their gym rooms and their locker rooms and all of this kind of thing. It's hard to even talk about, you know, but it's happening. It's happening. And I hate that it's happening in the state that I live in. So I want to be a person to try and do something about it. I mean, a politician, the first thing they're going to do when they get elected to office is try to raise money. And the second thing that they do when they're elected to office is thinking about being reelected. You know, skip what you want, what their constituency want. It's what they want. And a lot of politicians, they get elected, they become bought and paid for by the other side, and they work against the people who put them in office. So, I mean, this is a good thing. This is a good thing. But will corruption end in Illinois? No way. It's not going to end. Politicians are still going to be some of the dumbest people in the world and get caught with their hand in a cookie jar. You know, so I have no, even though Dennis Hastert is in a wheelchair, he seems like he's 74 years old. He seems weak and fragile. I have no sympathy for this guy. He mistrusted. He should have gotten 15 years. He should have gotten 15 years, you know. And I have no sympathy for him. He's a politician. He abused his office. He should pay for it. Okay. Moving right along, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. All righty. Fast food companies develop robots. And this is another thing I'm going to be talking about in some upcoming shows. A lot of these businesses around the United States, around America, especially fast food restaurants, and even some offices around town, they are starting to develop robots. Why are they? And I've told a few people that I knew before I even read this or heard about this, I knew that robots were coming because, you know, robots in the workplace, they don't ask for breaks. They don't have unions. They don't get tired. They don't have to take lunches. You know, so this is coming, and they don't, you know, they don't ask for raises. That's the most important thing that the employer wants. They don't ask for more money. And this is one of the reasons why a lot of these companies are, in the next few years, maybe months, or maybe right as I'm speaking, robots are now in the workplace, will now be in the workplace. And a lot of the employers are saying the reason why they are going over to automation is because they can't afford to pay people $15 and $16 an hour. See, all these people out here going up and down the street protesting, thousands and thousands of people downtown protesting $15 an hour. A lot of these people have gotten fired for that, but for just protesting for more money. They're taking off their job illegally, and the employer fires them for protesting for more money. And a lot of companies and cities around America are now actually paying their employees, fast food workers, $15 an hour. And then some of the owners are saying, "Hey, we can't do this. We're gonna go out of business trying to pay this amount of money." So a lot of the companies are developing robots. Check out a robot coming near you. And that's what robots will be, another thing that's killing jobs. The first thing that's killing jobs are these bad trade deals that some of these politicians make, even the president of the United States. Some of these bad trade deals that take jobs from the United States and put them overseas. And where the people work for 50 cents or 25 cents an hour in sweatshops, China, Vietnam, Mexico. These are where American companies are going. And once they go there, you will be out of a job. Robots are going to take your job. This is scary, folks. This is all the way scary. And it's serious. And it is the truth. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. I was just told I have 90 seconds on the show. 90 seconds on the show. So, folks, join me tomorrow. We will be talking about domestic violence. And I will have, hopefully try to have some people on the show who were victims of this, who will tell you out of their own mouths what happened. And I have listened to part of this, and it is stunning. It is so stunning. So join me tomorrow for that. So somebody keeps saying 60 seconds. So join me tomorrow for that, folks, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And thank you for participating in this show. And hopefully we will be together tomorrow. Bye-bye.